Action.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Your Average Critics, joined as usual by Obi. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Yeah, can't complain. It's nice and sunny now, so yeah, spring has sprung. Might be a bit of a shorter one, or certainly less to talk about than the last time where we covered so much that I forgot what we talked about and did put it all in the description. Main thing to talk about today will be John Wick Chapter 4 and The Mandalorian, and maybe a bit more about Shazam. Chris might join us later. Bit of film news. There's due to be a Secret Invasion trailer out later today. I think 7 o'clock Eastern time in America, which I have no idea when that is UK time. I think, what are they, 5 hours behind?
Yeah, I think that's midnight for us.
Okay, so we won't be able to talk about it this week. Although, you know, we've had a few clips of it. Emilia Clarke's character is apparently the daughter of Talos. But we'll see if that's confirmed. On Marvel as well, Liv Tyler is back for Captain America 4, reprising her role from The Incredible Hulk.
Is that Betty Ross?
Yes. Mm. As is it The Thinker? The character has come back from Incredible Hulk. So, yeah. Interesting. Have you seen some of the set photos that have come out or leaked or whatever they've been?
I haven't actually. I don't know what's popping off there, to be honest.
There was a shot of her and Anthony Mackie at a funeral scene, which some people were like, oh, are you just getting Harrison Ford for one movie and then killing him off? Mm. Or more likely, as there's someone cast in Secret Invasion as the President of the United States, that actor will, you know, in the movie pass away and then Thunderbolt Ross will take over as president. I think that's probably more likely.
Right.
But yeah, interesting. I mean, there was a lot of stuff that was going around Twitter yesterday, but I took all of it with a huge, huge dose of salt because it was April Fool's Day.
Oh, right. Yeah, of course.
You know, I've seen things about John Bernthal and Elden Henson coming back as Foggy and Punisher for Daredevil. But, you know, I don't trust much of that at all.
No. I saw something about The Flash being delayed, and I actually believed it for a second. I was like, hit the roof, mate. But, yeah.
Yeah, I saw that was about to fit in with James Gunn's DC.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Right, that is so typical.
The thing is, it's so believable as well, because the DCs are like a fucking mess. So I was like, oh, shit. It's probably true, but yeah. I was gonna say, I don't think we've spoken about. Have you seen like Disney basically saying that they're gonna like slow down on the content for like Marvel and stuff? They're gonna kind of only bring out like a couple of films and a couple of TV shows a year, kind of thing, compared to the three films and like three or four TV shows that we've been getting the past couple of years.
Yeah, I did see that. Again, I didn't know whether that was true, but I guess in a way it makes sense because some of the most recent slate has not necessarily gone down so well. Mm. But I do think, and maybe I'm just being kind to Disney, I do think that some of those films, you know, some of the visual effects issues particularly, you could probably put down to them being kind of done through COVID. Although I do think something like The Mandalorian, which I imagine was produced at least in part during COVID, does have much better visual effects. So I don't know. And also Marvel recently fired one of their like senior execs, Victoria Alonso. Mm. So not sure whether that was in response to kind of, you know, negative press around Ant-Man or perceived failures of certain projects, or if there was something else. I've seen, you know, suggestions that it was because she refused to edit something out for a international release. But yeah,
it does feel like,
well, from it kind of felt like she was being scapegoated a little bit, because when she got fired, people were like, oh yeah, like having a couple of stories come out saying how like demanding she was and stuff like that, and kind of like feeding into the narrative recently about kind of how hard VFX workers are, and kind of like how many deadlines they have to kind of meet and stuff like that, and they're feeding into her narrative of being quite demanding in that sense. So I think there was an element of kind of like, yeah, trying to connect it to, oh, these movies were kind of bad because she was in charge and now this person's gone, so yay for us, kind of thing.
Yeah. I mean, Ant-Man 3 has not even made $500 million.
When did it come out again?
Beginning of Feb.
Oh, wow. I'm surprised. Actually, I'm quite surprised. Then this thing, so I always think about, like, I think, so two things, I suppose. I kind of had, like, tricked myself into kind of thinking that this Marvel machine was kind of, like, undefeated kind of thing. Whereas, like, I think they kind of thought, and I suppose we kind of thought, as an audience, I'll speak for myself, really, but as a general audience, that anything Marvel puts out, yep, I want it. Give it to me. I want to see it. Whereas, actually, there's an element of people, like, people who aren't like me and you, Glenn and Chris, whoever, who will wait for someone to say, oh, she's, Ant-Man's really, really good, you should go and see it, before they go and see it. Mm-hmm. Like, there's people like us who just go and see everything, but the general movie-going audience will, especially, like, we're still kind of in, like, COVID-y times, well, coming out of it still, so people aren't in the theatres like they used to be still. I don't know if they ever will be like they were before. So they kind of will wait from word of mouth to hear kind of like what people are saying about a film before they go and see it. And I think there's a huge element of that. And I think Marvel have kind of like got into this space where they were like, anything we release now is going to like Kevin Feige, anything he touches turns to gold kind of thing. We can put out Ant-Man, we can put out Hawkeye, we can put out Miss Marvel, we can put out She-Hulk, and everyone's going to buy it and lap it up and love it because we are Marvel. And actually, it's not the case.
Hello?
Hello?
Oh, sorry. It kind of sounded like you were still talking and then I just didn't hear it.
Sorry.
Oh, I didn't listen out. Anyway. So, I mean, I guess Marvel was always going to struggle slightly after the Infinity Saga, having to, you know, launch some new characters, some of whom we haven't seen in literally 2.5 years. You know, your Shang-Chi's, the Eternals. There seems to be a whole kind of, at least what comes out, Blade seems to be a bit of a mess behind the scenes. I'm not sure how well the reception to the Thunderbolts lineup was. I do see why they would want to kind of reduce their output and focus on quality rather than quantity. You know, I guess back in the Infinity Saga, you would probably get like one or two, you know, couple a year, and you obviously didn't have the shows. I also wonder, with recent accusations about one of the more integral actors in the future of the MCU, they might be a bit nervous about that.
It's looking potentially a bit sticky.
Yeah. And I guess, you know, if the accusations are true, then he should not be part of the MCU. Well, I was going to say that the character that he plays, I guess you can benefit from there being so many variants that they could probably recast.
That's literally what I was about to say, yeah. You literally took the words out of my mouth.
Yeah. So that it could be something. Obviously, he's going to be part of Loki Season 2, at least in a small way. But, you know, The Flash is still being released, and that's a decision. by Warners. So, you know, we shall have to wait.
If the Flash isn't like popping, I'm gonna be very disappointed because I've heard nothing but good PR about that film, and it might be because, you know, it's people trying to hype up the DC trade, rah rah rah. But I was listening to a podcast the other day, and someone said he had a conversation with somebody who'd seen the film both like early stages and then after they kind of like made some tweaks and stuff like that, and they said the quote was, DC are being held hostage by how good this film is because they can't like drop the Ezra Miller stuff because of this film is so good, kind of thing. And I'm thinking, I hope it actually lives up to these standards, because if it doesn't, I'm going to be very disappointed.
Yeah, but James Gunn also came out and said that Shazam 2 was good, and
fair point.
I've not heard much positive stuff about that. But, you know, I will reserve judgment until I've seen it, if I get round to seeing it. Any other film or TV news?
No, not really. There was something about Star Wars, but I've completely forgotten what it was. I mean, in slightly unrelated news, I've got I'm going to Star Wars Celebration next week.
Nice.
And I got a space on the Lucas Studios panel on the Friday.
Okay.
So I'm quite looking forward to that. I'm hoping they're going to announce some new Star Wars films, sort of some new projects. So I just wanted to say that. I think that's quite cool.
bring your road mic and try and get a question in and ask why the Mandalorian is so boring.
This oh, episode. Ouch!
But you know, see what they say. Last bit of random news: Scott Pilgrim is having an animated series with all of voice cast returning. So that's a thing.
That came completely out of nowhere, I felt like.
Yeah, I know. And that had a cast that, when you look back on it, is quite starry. But at the time, they were not at the peak of their powers. You had like Chris Evans and Brie Larson, Kieran Culkin, who's been, you know, doing well in Succession.
Oh yeah.
So that's a thing. We'll see what that's like. That is certainly news. Anyway, do you want to talk about The Mandalorian first, or do you want to talk about John Wick Chapter 4?
Let's do John Wick on the off chance that maybe Chris joins us for The Mandalorian. I doubt it, but maybe.
Cool. So, John Wick Chapter 4, they've ditched the other suffix, which, you know, John Wick Chapter 3 was also
called Parabellum. Why did they do that? That's so stupid.
I know. It was John Wick Chapter 2, John Wick Chapter 3, Parabellum. Does anyone know what a Parabellum is?
And then it means prepare for war in Latin.
Okay. Like, fine.
I think Ian McShane says it in one line in the third film. That's the only reason why I know it.
Why is this not John Wick Chapter 4? Yeah.
In it.
Anyway, right, so this is the fourth and likely final entry into the John Wick main franchise, directed as usual by Chad Stahelski and starring Keanu Reeves, Lawrence Fishburne, Ian McShane, Lance Reddick in one of his final roles before he sadly passed away, age 60, which is so young. New characters this time include Donnie Yen and Bill Skarsgård and Rina Sawayama, who's actually a pop star as well.
Oh, really?
Yeah, didn't know that. So I thought she was quite
decent. Is that the Akira character?
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. So this sees John essentially try and get revenge against the High Table. He was shot at the end of Chapter 3. He's with the Bowery King, Lawrence Fishburne, who's kicking him out. He then goes to Morocco to kill the Elder of the High Table. And the Marquis, Vincent de Gramont, which is one of the most ostentatious names I've ever heard, played by Bill Skarsgård with his, I mean, better French accent than I could do, but I don't know how French people view it. He then goes to the New York Continental and kills Sharon, played by Lance Reddick. He's then got a contract out against John Wick, and Winston is stripped of his duties as hotel manager. John goes to the Osaka Continental to seek refuge, and basically it becomes a very long kind of cat and mouse between the Marquis and his kind of goons to chase after and try and kill John, with the, you know, bounty increasing. There's also a new character called Mr. Nobody, who is a kind of assassin bounty hunter, who starts to pursue John and seems to be quite good at finding him, although kind of weirdly becomes an ally of his. We can get into that. And yeah, so it goes between, there's Morocco, Osaka, there's Berlin, many set pieces, many pew-pews, and it kind of culminates in front of the Sacré-Cœur church in France, where Kane, played by Donnie Yen, and John Wick basically have like a one-bang shootout to either free John. If John wins, he's free of his obligation to the High Table. And Kane, he's got a daughter. He also wants her and him to be free. So they have a couple of... They slowly get closer and closer together, one shot, injure each other. John then gets shot, and the Marquis wants to finish him off himself, but... what he didn't realise is John actually didn't fire on the last attempt. So John kills the Marquis and they're both free of their obligation. Although John almost immediately then succumbs to his injuries and passes away just as he is free. Then there's a post-credits, which I completely missed, although I have since seen, where Akira, who is the daughter of the Osaka Continental manager who was killed by Kane, wants to get revenge. So I've summed up a 2 hour 49 minute film quite succinctly, but there is an element of, like, you know what you're getting. It's people chasing after John, John killing them. So yeah, I mean, you've seen this most recently. I think you saw it yesterday or the day before.
Yeah.
What were your initial thoughts?
Initial thoughts, as far as an action movie goes, it's probably, it's up there with the best I've ever seen. Like, from a set piece standpoint, from a visual standpoint, from a, like, just a stunt coordination standpoint, I think it's pretty flawless. It's, I think they did, like, what I think they did really well was, like, different, trying to think of the word. Like, the beginning, you'll probably know better than me, but like the beginning when he's chasing the people in Morocco, that felt like a Western. Then you've got the bit in Osaka, that was more like samurai kind of thing.
And yeah, then it plays with genre, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And I think they did that really, really, really well. I think the characters, I think one thing I like about John Wick is that whenever they introduce characters, I always find them interesting. At the very least, at least a little bit interesting. And I think they do a good job of kind of, well, a good and bad job, because they'll introduce characters. These characters will have a semblance of backstory or, and like connectivity between them. But they leave you with a thinking, oh, I really want to know what happened between these characters. Like John Wick and, I can't remember anyone's name. And Donnie Yen's character. Obviously, they're friends. They knew each other in the past. And then also the man who runs the Continental in Japan, like, yeah, they're friends. Him and John Wick friends as well. Like, then you could tell obviously there's backstory there, but we don't really know exactly like what went down. I think they do that between all these films as well. John Wick and Halle Berry's character in Chapter 3, John Wick in Common in Chapter 2, etc., etc. And I think they do really well for me to. Oh, actually, I'm really interested in the backstory of these characters. What they don't do so well a lot of the time is like explain what's going on, I would say, just generally. Actually, no, I'll stay on stuff that I do like, to be fair. I think that Donnie Yen's character, I think, was really, really engaging. Especially, I think it was an interesting choice to make him blind. And I think they did really well to kind of, like, show, oh, wow, this guy is very, very capable despite, you know, not being able to see. The revelation that he, I suppose, offered his eyes to the high table rather than having them taken. I don't really know exactly what that choice was for, but okay. I liked his motivation as well. Obviously, he had a daughter that he was willing to kill and die to protect, like they say in the film. I thought that the introduction of Bill Skarsgård's character was menacing, I thought, and just the right amount of smarmy, I think, for me to be like, oh yeah, fuck this guy kind of thing. But also someone who I think was, who was, like, even enough for me to take them seriously sort of thing. He wasn't like character, like, he wasn't like a classic, like, cartoon, caricature of a villain kind of thing. He was like someone who, you know, I suppose, and I suppose we'll get into it a bit later, but who stopped playing by the rules that this world had set and kind of, like, fell into his own hubris sort of thing. And kind of let himself be manipulated, basically, by Winston and others kind of thing, of like saying, oh, you can be the one to kill John Wick, da, 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 da. And it's like, yeah, in this world where everyone's kind of like under the high table, he kind of like let himself think, oh, I could probably be, you know, bigger than everybody else. I can be the legend who took down the legend sort of thing. I quite enjoyed that aspect of it too. I think that the action, I think, you know what, I actually think there was a decent bit of comedy in it, but not too much. I think there's a right amount of comedy and things were funny when they were supposed to be funny, sort of thing.
What did you think of the character of Killer, in the Berlin, you know, the fat guy who was a fat suit, Scott Adkins?
I didn't love it.
No, that felt caricatury.
Yeah, I agree with that. I didn't love it. Do you know what? At first cut, I thought it was Ben Affleck in a fat suit. but yeah, that character, I think if I had to kind of say what about the film didn't I like, it's probably that bit in Germany thing is probably the part of the film I liked the least. But because of, one, that character, and two, because of kind of like the whole backstory about John's family and all that stuff, which I kind of said in a chat we were talking about the other day. But like, I just think they've gotten really loosey goosey with like the rules and the world building in these last couple of films, which I don't appreciate all that much. But overall, I think really, really good, really good film. I did really enjoy it. I think if you tighten up like the writing of these films, then you've got one of like the best films probably that I've ever watched. But you know, you can't have everything. So
I think, you know, to reiterate, the film's 2 hours 49. It's long. It's, you know, not far off double what the first John Wick was. I think that was like...
It was 1 hour 40, the first one.
Yeah, it's like 100 minutes. And, like, to me, it doesn't earn it in the sense that, like, you could have cut out a couple of the set pieces and it wouldn't have really made any difference. I think, you know, the set pieces themselves all feel pretty different. Like you say, there's different kind of genre inflections of some of them. There's that, my favourite is the bird's eye view shot in the building in France. That felt like a video game, you know, like an old school kind of 90s video game. And they're all very impressive, like the Arc de Triomphe, the kind of choreography for those cars. And some of them were digital, but, you know, I think Chad Stahelski said they had about 40 cars in real life kind of dancing around. And that, I mean, it did feel like a dance in a sense. That's all really impressive. There weren't any set pieces that I thought were weak, but they're also a bit extraneous. Like, you didn't necessarily need them. Like, you could have cut out the Berlin bit, wouldn't really made any difference. You could have cut out the character of Mr. Nobody, wouldn't really made any difference. The kind of core of this is the the Morocco bit, which takes like 5 seconds, the Osaka bit, and then the Paris bit.
Yeah.
And you know, you could have cut much of the rest of it out and it would have still made coherent sense. Mm. So, and to be honest, like, it sounds ridiculous, but I was exhausted watching this.
Yeah.
Genuine. It was just non-stop, and it's really entertaining, but it was just like relentless. And, you know, there's only so many different ways that you can have this action where people are, you know, just shooting at each other, and, you know, John covering himself. Everyone's got these ballistic suits that they just kind of put it in front of their face and they, they're fine. So I was, a lot of it was really impressive. I agree with you. There's a lot of lore and backstory that they hint at, and you want more, particularly all of the stuff that would have happened before John Wick 1, essentially. More around like all of the other Continentals and what happens at those. The High Table. I mean, there seems to be a different member of the High Table every film, and like, there's 12 of them. But why has this marquee guy got, like, you know? I mean, I know they kind of explain why he's got beef with John, but I'm like, do you really?
Yeah, I thought that this film was going to be John going against like all of the High Table, because I think the marquee guy is just like a representative, right, of the High Table. So I thought that this film, because in number three, he's like, I'm going to kill them all. And I'm like, okay, cool. So I thought it was going to be him going up and literally killing every member of the High Table, but I guess not.
Yeah, and that would have been a better film. Not that I didn't think this film was good, but at least that might have kind of justified the 3-hour running time, because you've got 12 members of the High Table to kill. Whereas this was like, again, a proxy or a one member. And I still don't really know who the 12 are. There was one of the people from number two. I think he wanted his sister murdered so that he could take it, and then he got killed himself.
Yep.
So I know they say you kill one member and someone gets replaced, but still, like, considering John dies in this film, it kind of doesn't really suggest that he's got anywhere else to go. And so presumably the whole kind of assassin kind of code is just going to go back to how it normally was.
Yeah.
Which is fine.
Sorry, go on, continue.
I was going to say, it's fine, but yeah, this did feel, for John to truly be free, he would have to kill all of them, and that would have been really good. And then, you know, I also kind of have a little bit of disappointment that he died almost immediately after being free, because it's kind of like, you know, I know there's like the pride thing of being truly free, but kind of means that much of the last three films, if he died, it wouldn't have made any difference.
It would open up. Generally, I have the exact same feeling. Like, I think that, I think even just this film in particular, the fact that he dies at the end means that everything he went through, all the people who died, all the people he killed, all the people who kind of like died protecting him, Koji, I think he said his name was, Sharon, just two like people, innocent people, I would say innocent people, all the people who kind of like went to all the effort of trying to kill John Wick and ended up kind of getting murdered themselves, they all died for no reason.
And the effort that John went to stay alive.
Yeah.
Like, he's literally, you know, breaking the code and do all of this stuff, getting other people to do it, to keep himself alive, but then to then just die. Felt anticlimactic to me. I kind of, what I thought they were going to do when they showed the gravestone was to be like, the idea of John Wick is dead. Mm. And Keanu's character, you know, whatever his name is, the Belarusian name he's got, like, he can just live out his life as a new person, but they might still go down that route, but it didn't seem like it.
I agree.
Which is a shame. And the character of Mr. Nobody, I don't understand the point of him. Like, he was an interesting character. He's got a dog, he's got the backpack that he flips over into like a...
That's cool.
That was sick. But he kind of seems to immediately know where John is all the time, which is interesting in itself. He's got this booklet of, like, John and the symbols of, like, what this means. Oh, that's the Bowery King symbol, that's the Romana symbol. Yeah. He's got this... Was it $50 million target that he wants to get to?
Yeah.
I can't remember if they explained why. But he's and then he keeps like being like, right, okay, I can kill John. It's going to cost you this. And then eventually he gets the figure he wants. But at every occasion, I know he kind of allows John to live. And there's the point when John saves his dog. Fine. But in the final fight scene, he's just sitting there drinking a beer.
Yeah.
And I was like, there was times when I was like, you don't actually seem like you want to kill this guy. So, yeah.
I agree. It was a strange character whose true motivations I didn't really know, to be honest. I was wondering if he was somehow related to Halle Berry from the last film, because obviously they both had the dogs and they both did the attacking with the dogs. But obviously that wasn't the case. I didn't really get it. I think, like you said, what he did was cool. And obviously him kind of like negotiating with the Marquis and kind of like getting stabbed in the hand and all that shit. I thought that was cool. But yeah, when it come down to it, he was like, oh, okay. You saved my dog, so I guess all of this stuff that, again, everything I went through, getting my hand stabbed and all of that shit, like, all the people I killed, I guess means nothing now because you saved my dog.
And you got no money. You haven't got your target.
Yeah. Just to kind of like go off on a couple of things that I wasn't a big fan of. I am really, really, really confused. And again, this, and I guess you could say, he just wants to be free, blah, 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 blah. But like, my thing is like, what is John's plan? What does he want? Like, the start of this film. So, okay, let me go back actually. Let's go to film number one. The guys kill his dog. That his wife gave him, just took his car, all that. Get that, kills him, fine, makes perfect sense. Number two, he has a marker, the guy's a marker for him, he kills the woman, the guy then tries to kill him, he's like, oh no, fuck this guy, kills him. Cool, absolutely makes sense. Number three, he's on the run, and then goes to the elders, to the elder in Morocco, and the elder says, kill Winston, and you will be out from under our feet, like you'll be an assassin again, blah 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 blah. And he's like, okay, fantastic. Gets chopped off his own finger in order to do that. Then proceeds not to kill Winston, and then gets shot off a roof. Again, what did you want? Like, why did you go to all that trouble to chop off your finger, go to Morocco, kill all those people, blah blah blah, to then come back and say, actually no, I don't want to kill Winston, and now I'm just gonna, you know, be a rogue, I guess. And then number four comes along, and he's like, he just decides to kill more people to get to this new elder who he then also kills because he's like decided, oh yeah, I'm going to kill everyone and everyone under the high table. But why? What has anyone in the high table done apart from follow the rules that have been set out in the world? No one's cheated John. Apart from the guy number two, no one in the high table has done John Wick any wrongdoing whatsoever. The rules are set. John has broken the rules. He has not been punished, but then he wants to punish everyone because they won't let him do whatever he wants. Like, nah, you were in this world, you knew what the rules were, and you're not following them. This is what I don't understand. Like, I just don't get.
Yeah, so he goes to the elder and he asks for his wedding ring back, doesn't he? Because that's the ring thing. But they don't have it, and so you know that would be a motivation to like get that back before he dies. But again, he doesn't. So yeah, you're right. Like. Anyway, sorry, I interrupted you, so carry on what you're going to say.
No, I was just going to say, like, again, and this film comes around now, number four, and again, he's like, John's like, oh, yeah, I'm just going to kill everyone on the high table. But I'm just thinking, like, why? Like, why? And even people in the film say, okay, yeah, but you kill them, and someone just replaces them. Like, where does it end? And that's my thinking. Like, John Wick's not very smart. Like, I just don't understand why he wanted to kill everyone so badly. Like, they haven't done him any wrong. In my opinion, they haven't done him any wrong. In my opinion, he's in the wrong. In this film. Like, genuinely in the wrong.
That's going to be the little clip that you put on Twitter, isn't it?
Yeah, probably, to be fair. But, like, and I film one and film two, I'm on John's side. Film three and film four, for me, is a bit iffy. It's a bit wishy-washy, because I'm like, we have spent the last two films or three films setting out this world and setting out the rules, and then even in number three, when the adjudicator who comes on the high table's behalf, she is like to Ian McShane, these are the rules, you broke the rules, you are the New York Continental is now deconsecrated or whatever they say, and you're out. Like, that's fine. You broke the rules. John Wick broke the rules. He should be dead. You didn't kill him. Rah, rah, rah. Cool. Then you get to this film, and like, then they just say, oh yeah, the High Table has given the Marquis, like, basically carte blanche to do whatever he likes in order to stop John Wick. And then the Marquis, like, now he's going back on deals. Like, he says to the tracker, to Mr. Nobody, oh yeah, 20 million, blah, blah. Then says, oh no, you only get 20 million when you kill him. And I'm like, what's going on here? We set out this world where there was rules set and you had to follow the rules. And now even the people in the High Table aren't following the rules. That's getting on my nerves, because this is not consistent in your world building, in my opinion.
Yeah, you're right. And like you said, you know, he goes all that effort. He even entertains having to kill his friend, Kane, to free himself. And then spend no time being free. You know, like you say, what's his end goal? Because he might as well have just let Winston kill him and then it would have been over.
There's just one thing and I'm done. It was the bit, like, again, this is what I mean about the inconsistent world building, is in number three. Like, number three, they kind of, like, go even further into it. John's part of this, like, family who have a seat at the High Table, and then he has to renew his token to get some sort of a favour from them or whatever, and then he gets, you know, he gets burned on his back and whatever. He's no longer, he was Jardani, he was Belarusian, da da da. Like, I found all that backstory, awesome. And then, now he's removed from that family, cool. And then this one, he's like, oh, okay, yeah, actually, you know, you have to go back to that family. And I was like, what? And then even when he goes back to the family in Berlin, the woman who was in the thing in the beginning wasn't even there. It was like his cousin or something. I was like, what's going on? It seems really easy to get in and out of these families. Like, all you got to do is kill someone and then you're back in. Like.
Yeah. Anyway. Yeah. Maybe we're just deep in it too much, but, probably, you know, yes, if they, you know, for people like us, if you put details in, then you need to be consistent with them, because we will pick them apart. I did enjoy it. I thought it was too long. You know, this franchise needed to come to an end, but I just think I was slightly disappointed with how it did.
Continue.
I was just going to say, I'm interested to see what the Ballerina spin-off is like, which is set between 3 and 4.
Yes, yeah. Anna de Armas is going to be in that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that'd be interesting. And also they're doing like a Continental TV show, right?
Yeah, hopefully that will build out some of the stuff that we've been
bemoaning
that we haven't got.
Yeah. I will also say as well, oh yeah, 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 yeah. Before, sorry, I'm going in now, but why not? one thing I really liked about number two is that, like, as soon as you're in the Continental, everybody has to stop scrapping. Like, that's like, that, I like that as a rule. Like, this is neutral party. Like, no one's gonna, like, kill anyone. And I mean, people still do die, but, like, that was the idea. And then now in 3 and 4, they're like, oh no, okay, sorry, this place has been deconsecrated. All that war breaks out. And then, okay, as soon as the war started, okay, yeah, now it's reconsecrated. I'm like, what? This is so dumb. And then even in the flipping, again, in number four, they come in and to the Osaka Continental, and they're like, oh yeah, you can't do anything on this ground. And he's like, oh, throws up the High Table. Oh, by the way, it's been deconsecrated. Everybody get out. We're going to fucking start fighting. I was like, what? This is dumb, man. Honestly, that annoys me. Yeah. Sorry.
Also, how's John getting all these international flights?
It's a great question.
He's just like country hopping, yeah. And I'm like, there is a bounty out for you.
Yeah.
How is no one picked you up at an airport?
It's a great point. Also, to that point, well, not to that point, but kind of related. Why did he go to Japan in the first place?
Big refuge, or to ruin someone else's life, probably.
You know what I mean? Like, presumably he just went to go and chat to his mate. But I'm like, literally, the daughter says, like, death follows you everywhere you go. Why are you going to... You know that these people know where you are. Why are you going to... Oh, I'm sorry, John's not smart. I'm sorry, he's not. He's stupid. He's just going to places that puts him in danger. And I'm like, why are you doing this? Your friend is now dead because of you. And his hotel's been destroyed because of you. But you're dead, yeah. So that matter now. You didn't even get to live for all this nonsense. And it sounds like I didn't enjoy the film. I really did enjoy it, by the way. I thought it was really, really good.
But just again, things like that to me, from a writing perspective, are not well thought. It's not well thought out, in my opinion.
What would you have given it out of 10?
I'll probably give like a 7. Yeah.
I think that's where I sat with it.
Mm.
Cool.
I also think, do you not think, sorry, I don't know when the last time you watched 1 to 3 was. Do you think Keanu was, Keanu Reeves was extra wooden in this one, or is it just me?
Yeah, I did. I feel like he leaned into that.
Yeah.
A lot more. Apparently he had like 380 words the entire thing.
Really? That's true.
Yeah, and I think like 40% of them were, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I also found the stairs scene like really frustrating because he kept getting knocked down. I thought that was
bare funny.
I was like, you said you've got 2 minutes. How was, like, it would take me more than 2 minutes to run up those stairs, yeah, let alone like kill people on the way. But anyway.
I think it got to the point where, like, you know, when a joke is funny and then it goes on so long that it stops being funny and then it keeps going so long that it starts being funny again.
Yeah.
That's how I felt with this.
Like what Family Guy do, and they just keep doing a joke, and you're just like, oh no, it's actually funny again. Yeah. It was that was also a very exhausting scene. But so let us know if you're listening what your thoughts are on John Wick 4. Tweets at YC Podcast 17 or on Instagram at Do You Average Critics, trying to be a bit more active on both. I think you put your rating or ranking of the four films as 1, 4, 2, 3.
Yeah.
I think based on what I can remember about number 2, which is the pew-pew scene with Common, go 1, 2, 4, 3, but you've rewatched them a lot more recently than I have. Let's move on to The Mandalorian. So this is season 3? Or is it 4? No, 3, yeah. 3.5 if you count the couple of episodes from The Book of Boba Fett. This sees Jin with Grogu. He is basically trying to redeem himself. He's also kind of excommunicado in a way from the Mandalorian family, creed, and so he wants to redeem himself and he needs to bathe in the living waters of Mandalore, which he's told, you know, is impossible because Mandalore is poisoned. He kind of finds a way around that in like episode 1, which is fine. So we are four or five episodes in.
Episodes, but I haven't watched episode 5 yet.
Oh, okay. Okay, well, I will try and remember where. Okay, cool. Right. So we're over halfway through this season. And only really kind of figuring out what the end point of this series is going to be. Mm. Thus far, we've seen some world building around Mandalorians. You know, we've seen a couple of bits about how their foundlings train, about, you know, we go to Mandalore and what that looks like now. The kind of monster that lives underneath the waters, the Mythosaur. Got Bo-Katan, who seems to be less kind of aggy now, a bit more willing to help. We've had Grief, the character played by Carl Weathers. He's now a magistrate of Navarro, but that was under attack by a pirate, which looks like a piece of moss. Then you've also got two characters from the earlier series who, you know, kudos to you if you remembered who they were, sort of being in this like reform program for the Republic because they were part of the Empire. And you know, that's explored a little bit more in chapter 5, chapter 21 I should say. But to me, this series hasn't had the same level of direction in terms of like where it's going as the first two, particularly not like the second series, which was, you know, getting Grogu to his people, to be like the Jedi, to be trained and like getting away from, Moff Gideon. And then this just feels like it's meandering a bit. Like, oh, we're going here. We're going to find out a bit about here. Like the Foundling episode, you know, Grogu trains for about 5 minutes, and then it kind of cuts, and then one of the other families gets randomly taken by this dragon-looking thing, and then they have to go and retrieve him. But that was also quite easy because she's like, "Oh, here it is, found the nest." Mm. And then the episode, is that the same episode with
the flashback?
Yes, which was interesting. Mm. I quite like that bit. But then you also had, I think it's episode 3 where, it was the longest episode by far. I mean, it was close to an hour long, but 45 minutes of that was about two characters, Elia Kane and Dr. Pershing, who I'd forgotten about, but they kind of, it's like a burgeoning friendship, almost romance story about them kind of finding each other. They both were part of the Empire. She then betrays him. And that's sandwiched right in the middle of Bo-Katan and Jin departing Mandalore and coming back to the place where the Mandalorians are. And it just felt so, like, stuck in. It really didn't work for me. So, yeah. I don't really know what they're trying to do with this series, and I'm not really enjoying it very much.
I'm in quite a similar boat to you. I think that when you think of like back to Mandalorian season one, that was very much like a episodic. Mando's got to go to this place, meet this person, do this task to get this thing to get to the next place, that sort of thing. Mm. Then you've got, which I enjoyed. Obviously not as, I think then you didn't enjoy it as much, but I still enjoyed that. And I kind of thought that was what The Mandalorian was going to be. Then you move to season two, and then it's kind of like, has more of an overarching theme, like, we need to get Grogu back to his people, how are we going to do that? And then obviously, you know, goes through the season, meeting different people, going to different places, kind of similar to season one, but on like a different level, I suppose, which I enjoyed a lot again. Then yeah, season three now, there's, obviously, I've only watched episode four episodes. I don't know what happens in episode five. But I would say that I do not quite know what the plan is. Like, from episode one and from the trailers, I thought, okay, cool. The plan is to get to Mandalore. And he's going to go to do the Living Waters, blah, blah, blah. And I thought that, but I thought that was going to be the end of season goal. But he does that in episode, what, two?
Mm.
So I was like, okay, so we're here now. So, like, so now what? That kind of thing. And then, yeah, you get these episodes which kind of feel like cobbled together, are vaguely related, but I still find myself thinking, okay, so where are we going with this? Like, what does Din need? Now, Din's now been reinstated to the Mandalorian, so now what's he on now? Like, what does he need to accomplish now? We don't, like, from episode four, I'm like, okay, he's back now, so, like, he's nothing for him to do. Grogu, he's... He went to his people, he decided to come back. Now he's just chilling with his dad, becoming a fan, to become a Mandalorian. In my eyes, he's not got anything kind of forward going. Bo-Katan's the only one with, maybe a interesting plot as into like, where does she go from here kind of thing? Cause she obviously didn't get the dark saber at the end of season two. Start of season three, she's got a palace with no followers or nothing. Then her palace gets destroyed, so she's got nothing, she's got no one. So, and then now she kind of finds a new home, new family, being accepted by the Children of the Watch version of the Mandalorian. So, yeah. She is the only person, or the only character in the show, who I feel like, okay, she is moving in a direction where I'm interested to see where it goes. The other two main characters, in inverted commas, I'm like, okay, from where I'm standing, their story is done. Like,
yeah.
I don't really see where we go from here sort of thing. And you've got like, and I don't mind Bo-Katan being main kind of thrust of the season. That's absolutely fine. But it just feels very cobbled. I think I said it a minute ago. It's very cobbled together. It doesn't feel very well thought out, well planned out. Like you're saying, you've got the episode. In episode three, when Bo-Katan's castle gets shot down and everything like that, she says, it's like a throwaway line, but I feel like it's going to be more important going forward. She says, oh, that doesn't look like Imperial. That's all, like, it's too much for it to be an Imperial wall or something like that. Like, when all the ships are coming down and bombing the place. So you think, okay, that must be somebody else that we're going to revisit later. And I'm like, okay, cool. So what does this mean? Are we going to come back to this? Or is that kind of just like a thing we're just going to, you know, two seasons of time, maybe we'll hear about it like we do with Professor Pershing and Elliot Kane. Episode three, in and of itself, I think that part with Bo-Katan and like the dogfighting and all that stuff, the bookends, I think interesting. The middle, I actually think very interesting. In terms of like that rehabilitation program, because like you would liken it to like Nazis and stuff. Like in people, there would be, you know, these scientists and these people who, I mean, not necessarily who were kind of like turned bad, but people who were like kind of maybe forced into doing things that maybe they didn't want to do. Maybe people who kind of like did do what they wanted to do, but are also still useful to this new kind of like not empire, this new kind of like government or establishment or whichever, that we think, okay, actually, yeah, we can still use people like this. And like I was really interested to kind of like see how that kind of like they put that dynamic in a Star Wars setting, and I think they did a good job of it. And I think I said in the chat, like, it felt like more like an Andor episode than it did a Mandalorian episode, which I don't mind, but I think it just felt very out of place with where they put it in between those two scenes with Bo-Katan and Din and everybody else.
Yeah, I feel you know, that code a bit, the beginning and end, they could have just plonked that onto the end of episode two.
Yeah.
And it would have made more sense for episode three to just be self-contained as that exploration of the reform program. And I would say episode five gives you an idea of now what they want to do.
Okay.
But you've got three episodes left, so
yeah,
it's not going to be difficult for them to do that. You know, everything in the show is relatively easy, isn't it? It's kind of like, we need to do this or get this. Okay, we've done it and we've got it. Which, you know, it's fine. There is a thread that is explored more in episode five from episode three, which is interesting of itself, but feels like it is separating from The Mandalorian. Which, you know, would be really interesting to explore, but yeah, it doesn't feel like they feel like they're just tying things to The Mandalorian now. Whereas actually it kind of probably needs its own New Republic series, where it's like you said, with Andor, it's like, it's about the government the kind of politics of it. And that character, you know, what they did with Andor really well was use Cassian as that conduit to explore all of that. I don't necessarily think Mando would fit into that sort of role. So yeah, it kind of felt to me like episode three was kind of like a backdoor pilot in a way, to sort of be like, hey, should we explore this? Which I would be keen for.
Yeah, me too. I think it's an interesting subject matter, personally.
I don't see any of it really being resolved, because
you've
got three episodes left. You still, you know, you've got what Mando's doing. You've got what Elia Kane's doing. She's still clearly sympathetic to the Empire. Yeah, so it just seems a bit muddled, which is a shame, because Boba Fett was also quite muddled.
Yeah, it's an interesting direction, or lack of direction, I suppose, that they're kind of going with this series. And it's so funny, because like that episode, or episode and a half, pretty much, of in Boba Fett, where the Mandalorian was basically in all of it, would have been a great way to start season three, I think, of the Mandalorian. And it still grinds my gears a little bit that they kind of like did that, and then So then now in this series, they still have to kind of like go reiterate the fact that, oh, okay, this stuff happened in Boba Fett that like you people may not have seen sort of thing if they only watch The Mandalorian. And yeah, from the start, I think it felt a bit, I don't know, like disjointed or lacking in kind of like inspiration, I guess. I think that there, again, I don't want to shit on it because there are aspects of the episodes that I have enjoyed. I think that the flashback scene with Grogu and all that and all them people was really good. I will kind of say, this is like the hater in me is a little bit like, the Jedi are kind of bitches, aren't they? Like, there was bear of them, like in the flashback of Grogu, there was bear of them. And there was like, to be fair, there was bear clones, but like, come on, like use the Force, like, come on. Like, I just kept thinking, like, how did they all get washed like this? I just felt like they should be doing better. But anyway, the guy who saves him, did you know the guy who, the actor of the guy who saves him, Kelleran Beck, I think is his name, or something like that.
Okay.
He's the guy who voiced and did, fuck me, what's his name? Misa Yusa, that guy, what's his name?
Jar Jar Binks.
Jar Jar, that's the one, thank you. Jar Jar
Binks. Is it?
Yeah.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Yeah, and apparently I think his character was created in like 2019, and he is basically like the best lightsaber fighter in the history of the Jedi, basically. And I think the actor in real life like knows like all like loads of martial arts and stuff like that, which is why they did that. So I think that was pretty cool. Nice little. Nice
I liked that bit. It just seems like they kind of. The Mandalorian and Grogu are popular characters, and now they're just kind of flogging a dead horse. It's like, you know, what could be interesting is to go back to that episodic thing of like, he is essentially a bounty hunter, so he could go and do bounties. I feel like Grogu, the character of Grogu, dragging him down.
I agree. I genuinely agree. Yeah. I think that we are probably the minority who think that, but I think they should have. When he got Grogu to Luke in season two, we should have said goodbye to Grogu at least for a season, maybe two seasons, then he can come back later. But he is so fucking popular that like it was impossible for them to do that. And to be fair, I get it, but also like, come on, like, God, let's progress this story. Because again, like you say, it feels like you're beating a dead horse. I want progression for my characters. And at least now, and I think I said this last time we podded as well, like at least now, if Grogu is going to be back, Please, he has to learn how to talk, and he has to be able to start doing stuff properly, because it's it's getting a bit redundant, he's cute, he's this, he's that, he's eating things that he shouldn't eat, and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, come on, man, like, please, be a coherent character.
But also, didn't they say that there's been a time jump, which they haven't really explained, that he had been training with the Jedi for years, or
something. For 2 years.
Yeah, and it's like, okay, well... You know, what they could have done is have that gap, explored it through flashbacks, or had its own little mini series of like Grogu training and like allow Mando to do something on his own. But I'm kind of going back to how I felt about Mandalorian from season one, which is a shame.
I do get it.
I'll get through it, but
yeah,
you know,
I do get it. I do. I was very much like with the Star Wars shows in general. When Mandalorian came out, I was like, "Oh, this is where Star Wars is going from here. I can get with this kind of thing." But then now we've had Obi-Wan, which was average at best. We've had Boba Fett, which was bad, in my opinion, just bad. And now Mando season 3, which again is very, very mid. So I'm like, "Eesh, are we going back into the shitness of Star Wars, or are we kind of? I thought we were rising up, but maybe not. I don't know."
Yeah, you know, we've got Ahsoka coming out. I always say that wrong, don't I?
You got it right, so.
Oh, good. And Skeleton Crew, I think. Yes. So, and then obviously Andor season 2.
I forgot about Andor. Andor, great. To be fair, hold my hands up. Great series.
Yeah. Also, Donnie Yen plays a blind character in Rogue One. So.
He does.
I had to Google afterwards. I was like, is Donnie Yen actually blind? Because the last two roles I could think of him in, he was blind. And I was like, oh, And I was like, oh my god, if he genuinely is blind, then all of that choreography is amazing.
I feel like, you know, I feel like amongst the John Wick chat, I didn't really talk about how much I enjoyed his character. I really enjoyed his character. I thought he was great. Sorry, just wanted to say that.
Yeah, he was like, it just kind of was cool, wasn't he? Like, there's that in Osaka, he's like eating food in the kitchen, and then he puts like the doorbells on the appliances so that he knows where people are.
Yeah,
And he's,
that's cool.
He's got some good lines.
Even the bit where he was like, where him and John first fight, and he's like, are you dead, John? And he's like listening out for him.
Oh, yeah.
And then obviously he makes that little noise, and they start fighting, they start scrapping again. I was like, yeah, that's jokes. Yeah, really good character. And then when, at the end, when they're about to do the shoot-off, and the Milwaukee comes up to him and says, I'll think about a door, and he's like, fuck off! I thought that was jokes.
Yeah. Talk to us briefly about Yellow Jackets. What is it?
Yellow Jackets is it's a Showtime TV show, but it's on Paramount Plus and also Sky Atlantic in the UK. It's a drama series, and I think it might be supernatural as well, but I'm actually not entirely sure. It's a very intriguing in that sense. But anyway, it's about a group of girls who are on a soccer team, football team, who are on their way to a state championship, and the plane they're on crashes in the wilderness. And it flashes from back and forth from 1996, when the girls were on the plane and they crashed, to 2021, where we see some of the girls who survived, basically, in their everyday life, I suppose. And it kind of, like, obviously, the fact that they went through this accident, their lives now in 2021 are consumed by kind of, like, that incident and kind of what they went, the trauma they went through, because they were in the forest for almost 2 years. And they had to do certain things that they allude to and people are suspecting of, but we're not entirely sure. So basically we think that they were eating each other, basically. But we haven't been confirmed yet, but that's the suspicion. And like, they kind of flash back and forth of kind of like how the crash died and kind of how they kind of had to learn how to fend for themselves, what they kind of had to do to survive, what they kind of like turned to or who they turned to. The relationships they formed with each other and with people who they weren't necessarily as close with during that time. And then obviously in the present day, they are very much all estranged, but they kind of like come back together through a mutual enemy who's trying to blackmail them for a story. And, you know, things happen. They do things are done to them. And yeah. There's a larger thing at play, but we don't quite know what it is yet. So like, I'm trying so hard to say stuff about like giving it away, because I would actually like you to watch it again, because I think it's actually a very good series.
Okay.
It's like, I'm trying to think what I could liken it to. I think it's got a bit of Big Little Lies about it, like that kind of vibe.
Okay, like. I liked that. I only saw series one, but I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, it's kind of like got that vibe, Big Little Lies, Desperate Housewives, that sort of vibe to it. And I think, yeah, it's generally a very good series, well acted, quite funny at times as well, I would say. And I think the one thing they do really, really well is the actresses, I'm not sure which I'm supposed to use now, but the actors who play the young women and the actors who play the present day women look so sick. They did, the casting is great. They look like so similar. Like, this could actually be like a younger version of this current actress, which I think was really, really good. And like, kind of, I think stuff like that keeps you in the series as well. Like, cause I think back to randomly, like when I used to watch This Is Us, before it finished, the character who played, Sterling K. Brown's character, obviously in the show present day, obviously dark skinned black man, and then when they would flash back, his younger version himself would be like this mixed race kid. I'm like, this doesn't make sense, like that's not him, like, and it was just like,
oh, you mean This Is Us, you said The Last of Us.
Oh, sorry, yeah, This Is Us, sorry.
I was like, was Sterling K. Brown in The Last of Us?
Sorry, This Is Us. Yeah, and like stuff like that would just take me out of the show whilst I'm watching it, because I'm like, oh, that's like, it's dumb, like, it would make me nitpick on things like that. And I think this show does really well with the casting and also the acting of all of these, all the actors, all young and old, I think is really, really strong. And it's very engaging. And it's very much keeping me guessing. Like I just finished season one the other day, and I'm literally like, I still don't really know what happened in the forest, and I'm still like, I don't know what's happening in the present day either, but I really want to know what's going on.
Yeah. Okay.
Good show.
I will check that out. I've been watching The Night Agent on Netflix.
Oh, is it good? I just want to watch it.
Yeah, I'm probably about halfway through, but I'm enjoying it, and I'm not one of these people that would necessarily, like, this is going to be sacrilege to you, I know, but I've never been able to get into 24.
Oh, boo!
I think I needed to have started it back in 2002, whenever it started, because watching it now, it's got that, like, techno-punk kind of feel to it, a bit Matrix-y, you know, like, with all of the people in their, like, belly tops and their, like, leather jeans and short haircuts, and it was just a bit too kind of, like, melodramatic. So I do struggle to get into those sorts of, like, spy political thrillers.
Yeah.
But I really enjoyed this one. I will give you a bit, like, bare bones about what it is. It follows this FBI agent who works in the White House as like a kind of dual role. He reports to both the FBI and the White House. And he mans this phone, which is called like the Nightline. And essentially it should never ring. And he just does like paperwork and stuff. But then it rings and he ends up getting involved in, you know, like a conspiracy, which sounds, you know, relatively generic, and the plot in its essence is quite generic, but what I like about it is the two lead characters, I enjoy them. They're not like annoying. You know, yeah. Some of these, like in some of these shows, they can get pretty annoying. Hong Chau's in it, and I think she's really good in pretty much everything I've ever seen her in. And also, like, one of the women, the female lead, who's basically being protected by the FBI agent, she's not stupid. She doesn't kind of like do things to cause them to get into to difficulty, which again tends to be kind of the trope. So they've avoided that, which I think is to its credit. And also she kind of asks questions like, why don't we do X, or why is this a case of, you know, what we're doing, which again makes sense. Like the questions she asks are kind of questions that I would be like, yeah, actually that's a good point. You know, someone in this situation might ask that question. So I'm not saying it's realistic, but it's entertaining, and I'm enjoying it. So give The Night Agent a go, and let me know what you think.
I'm gonna give it a try, because that's my like political like series, political thrillers. That's like my bag. So I'm eager to give it a try. Did you watch? Did you ever watch the? And Chris, I was supposed to be on the call now as well. Ask you too. Did you ever watch The Recruit? I think it's called on Netflix with I think it's Noah Centineo, the guy from Black Adam.
Yeah, I watched it all.
Did you enjoy it? I thought it was really good.
I thought it was decent. I thought it was a bit far-fetched, but it was decent. I thought it was good fun.
Okay. Hi, Chris, by the way. Well, I might give that a go after The Night Agent, then. I might sort of...
I think they're very different. I think they're going to be very different. One's more comical, while one's probably serious.
Yeah, The Recruit's way more... I wouldn't say way more. It's still serious-ish, but there's a lot more like... It's more like charm... Like, the lead's more charming and comical kind of thing, rather than, and like, sarcastic, rather than serious. Like,
okay.
Yeah,
I agree.
I'll maybe give the first episode a go. And there was also one that Charlie Cox is in, I think, called Treason or something.
I started that.
I heard it wasn't good.
And I didn't, the first episode didn't grab me, so I said, you know what, I'll give it a miss.
But let's go from The Recruit to Shazam Fury of the Gods in two moves. Who can do it?
So The Recruit has Noah Centineo in it, and he was in Black Adam, and Shazam is related to Black Adam, therefore Shazam.
Yeah, there you go. I also heard that maybe the Justice League of America cameo at the end. I don't know if that's true, but
yes.
Anyway,
Justice League of America.
What are they called?
Sorry.
Sorry. Much of a muchness. Chris, you've joined us to talk about Shazam Fury of the Gods. Please feel free.
I apologise.
Alright. Feel free to go into details. I haven't seen it, but I really am not bothered. I will get around to seeing it, but, you know. So, you and Obi, take it away. Chris, let us know what you thought of it.
Well, I'm going to say straight off the bat, I think it's a shame that no one is going to see it. I don't think it's like a world breaker of a...
Chris, I'm sorry. Yeah. Chris, I interrupt you really quickly. Sorry. Yeah. I thought you were going to say it's a shame. I was going to say it's a shit film.
Yeah, I thought that's what you were going to say as well.
I mean, it's not a world beater, let's put it that way, but I'd say it's probably on par, if not better than Black Adam. Not that that's saying a lot. That film made, what, 3 times its budget? Well, potentially, depending on what Rock's actual wage was for the film, which hasn't been disclosed. But it's a similar vibe to the first film, a bit quirky, a bit funny. It's basically six adults. I genuinely thought it was 7 of them, but it's basically 6 adults acting as if they're kids and trying to fight crime. I think this film could have gone into depth in aspects of it a little bit better in what it was trying to achieve. But I did think it was funny. I think there were points of the film where it didn't make sense. I'm trying to think what they were now. They introduced the villains quite quickly into this film, don't they? If I'm not mistaken.
It's like the first scene, I think.
Yeah, the first scene. And it's like right off the bat, bang, we've been met with these villains. I feel like they've made Billy Batson proper stupid in this film.
They've made Shazam stupid. Billy's fine. Shazam's an idiot.
Yeah, but Shazam is Billy.
Yeah, but when he's Shazam, he's an idiot. When he's Billy, he's an adult. It's very strange.
Yeah, this is the thing. And then I kind of like I'm on the middle ground of, to open the film, the kids are going off and then they all Shazam turn into their counterparts. And all the kids say, bye mum, bye dad. And Billy won't say, bye mum, bye dad, whatever. And then I think he says it at the end, doesn't he? I can't even remember him saying it. Basically, the whole reason he's not saying mum is because he thinks they're going to let him go when he turns 18.
Mm.
But he was 14 in the first film, so how many years have passed?
He's 17 in this film.
So 3 years have passed, right. And then my other counterpoint to that would be the girl, cannot remember her name, the one that everyone thinks hot.
Mary.
Which I don't disagree with. She's 18, if not older, and she's still living with him. So I was a bit like, why has he got this angst? But then again, it's all about perspective. Everyone's left him, so yeah. I feel like there could have been a bit more development in the relationship between the God girl and the geezer who is Mr. Everything.
Freddy,
that's the one.
And Thea, so no.
Oh, okay, cool. Yeah. I think in terms of the villains, they were decent. I think the best one was the one who actually wanted to kill them all. She was the best villain.
Lucy Liu,
yeah. She was by far the best villain. I don't really understand why they needed all three of them. Mm. Because the other two were just half-hearted. One obviously didn't want to be a villain. The other one, she wanted to do something, but not so chaotic it would destroy the world. And then Lucy Liu was like, fuck you all. I'm going to fucking kill the world. Fucking Shazam was so stupid. Like, so basically, Glenn, the premise is that the bad guys pick up the staff, they put it back together, they get the powers of the staff, and then they basically want to plant the... Do they originally want to plant the apple, or do they just want to destroy the world, and then they find the apple?
They wanted to take the apple back to their world.
Yeah, okay. So one of the bad guys wanted to take it back to their world and recreate the world, basically, and the other one was like, fuck it, I'm going to put it into this earth and destroy the earth, basically, is the premise I got. But Shazam stole back the staff, and then he went to throw it to Freddy, and then Lucy Liu caught it, and I was like, what the fuck is going on? I was like, why did he throw the staff? it infuriated me. But on the flip side, some of the jokes were funny. They played to the adolescence part a bit, like the girl being 18, drinking, having hangover. You saw like Billy trying to organise the crew, but no one really cared because they had superpowers. They did a bit where they one of the characters said he was like homosexual, and they were like, "Oh yeah, we all know, it's all good." Yeah, they had little bits and pieces that like made them all like quite family orientated. And it was a funny film. I don't know if it was necessarily like a world beater, but it was a decent film, I thought. I don't really know what else to say about it. It's not really much to talk about for it, I feel.
I thought it was fairly generic. I think in terms of quality, it's not, I think it's a bit worse than the first Shazam film, but I think I like that one a bit more. I think that the action stuff, like all of that, I think, yeah, super, super all, I've seen it all before kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So none of that really grabbed me. I liked Helen Mirren and Helen Mirren? No.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
No, not Helen Mirren.
Yeah.
Is it Helen Mirren?
Yeah. Okay. That's what I think of. Yeah.
I'm telling you, these white women, I get them all mixed up. Okay.
Hey, we do not condone the.
I was going to say Meryl Streep. I get them all mixed up. Anyway, so. I thought they were good. I enjoyed them as villains, especially I think that first scene that Chris was talking about, where they come in. Basically, they come in and they like turn, they bring the staff back together. And they turn everyone in the museum to stone or whatever. Or stone.
Oh yeah, they like whisper and they whisper to people and they like go mental.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Like that first scene was really good. And then yeah, they make everyone go mad, like talking in the ears. Like that's Lucy Liu's power of persuasion or something like that.
Yeah.
And then she also does it later to one of Freddy's teachers, makes him kill himself, basically. So, really good. Really interesting. And I enjoyed that. But I think there's just certain aspects of the film where, like, I just thought it was so predictable. Like, when Freddy meets Anthea, which is Rachel Zegler, her character, I was like, okay, yeah, so this girl's going to be, like, evil, basically.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. Obvious, pretty obvious from the get-go kind of thing. I think that was, and then from that point onwards, it's very much like a paint by numbers superhero film, I think. And you've got like bits in there with Darla or Megan Good, where she's comes up with this plan to get ready to get past these monsters, which are they're unicorns, and she uses like skittles. She has like skittles, and the skittles give them like serotonin or something like that. I don't know. And they like are able to like control the unicorns. And I was like, this is stupid. I get it's a kids' film, but I was like, this is dumb.
Skittles definitely pay to do that.
I think there are moments in the film which I do genuinely enjoy. Like I think the final scene where Shazam basically, spoiler alert, basically like sacrifices himself to kind of like save the world or save Philadelphia or whatever is good. And like when he's like outside the bubble and him and Freddy are like having like heart to heart and he's like, I'm Captain Every Power Junior, like don't worry about me kind of thing. It's like callback to earlier in the film. Like I enjoyed those moments. And obviously later on when you got him, Billy's dead and like everyone's like obviously mourning him. Mm-hmm. Which I thought was a really bold choice. And I thought would have been, obviously, part of me knew they weren't going to, like, stick with that choice. But I thought, wow, like, what if they do kind of, like, leave him dead, what a choice that would be kind of thing. And then, obviously, they kind of, like, bring it back with the Wonder Woman cameo, which I said the other day, which was very blatantly filmed at a completely different time to the rest of the film. Because she was never, ever in shot with anyone else in the scene. It was always just cuts and switches between her and the other people, which is fine.
You know when she was, you know when they're having a meal, was that legit or was he dreaming?
I think he was dreaming, but the wizard put himself in the dream.
Okay, because it really threw me off that part. I was like, oh, is he actually talking to her?
I think it was a dream, yeah.
But those fake outs, like if you're killing someone off, like why even resurrecting him like 5 minutes later? It just makes everything so hollow.
Mm.
Yeah, I mean, it was a pretty brute, like, he, like, the way he fought the bad guy, it annoyed me because he, like, there was a beam of, like, energy just aiming straight and he went straight into it.
Mm.
And then he would, like, duck and dive underneath and then go straight back into it again. I thought, this is so silly. But obviously, it's, like, meant to be more impactful that he's doing this. And obviously, he's a novice fighter as well, so you've got to kind of take that in consideration. Mm. But, like, I feel like he got such a brutal scar. He didn't even make, like, a breath of noise when he was down on the ground.
Mm.
It was very impactful, you're right. And it's kind of like, it is hollow that he's just suddenly come back to life again.
Mm.
And yeah, there's no, like, afterthought about it either. It's just kind of, he died, he's back.
Yeah.
It's okay. They've all got their powers again. It's all good. It's just like, nah, not feeling that.
I agree, to be honest. And I think throughout the film as well, and I suppose this is the problem with having that kind of like Billy Batson character in general, is that in like the animated films, in the comics and stuff like that, Billy's always, I don't know, 10, 12, 13, 14 years old. So when he turns into Shazam and he still acts like a child or like a teenager, it makes sense. But when you've got Billy Batson now, and Asher Angel, I think is the actor's name, who's grown up, obviously he's an adult now, he's grown up fast, like he's 17 in the film, the actor himself, I think he's in his 20s, or maybe just turned 20, and he's acting mature, or more mature than the first film, when he turns into Shazam, he's acting like he did in the first film when he was 13, 14, doesn't quite marry up, and it's quite jarring, I think.
Yeah. Anyway. Definitely no Wisdom of Solomon there, is there?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's so jarring.
Solo Man, as he calls him.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
What was your thoughts on the pen and paper?
I liked it, then I didn't like it.
Yeah, it got a bit much, I thought.
Yeah.
Basically, this pen writes for you whatever you want to say, and it'll send the message to any god. And they basically were writing it nicely, and then, like, Shazam or one of the art characters would be like, oh, that's a wicked line, and the pen and paper would write that in. And then they would keep talking and then saying the bit, and then they'd send that letter off, and the person was reading the letter verbatim for what the pen had written. And it was comical to begin with, but then it kind of just got a bit samey. I just think that, I agree with you. I think they teed up a lot of things and you could see it come in. Mm. It's like I was saying, like when the character came out, and they were all saying, oh, we're superheroes. And he said, like, he's like, I'm gay. I was like, I saw that come in. And, like, it's like other things like...
I thought we knew he was gay. I thought they knew he was gay.
I thought we did too. That's why I was confused.
Yeah.
But maybe it's because the first scene... Is it the first scene in the film? He's, like, reading something.
Watching baseball. And he's looking at the geezer in the baseball.
That's it.
Yeah, but, I mean, I don't mind it. Like you say, I like that scene as well.
I thought it was funny, but I feel like they teed it up, and the other scenes they teed up, like, like you said, the girl at the beginning being very kind, nice, and then, like, he's like, oh, I'll bring out the superhero, and then she's like, oh, I don't want you to hurt Freddy. I don't want Freddy to be here because he'll get hurt, and you're just like, okay, straight away, you know she's going to be evil.
Yeah.
And then it's like, to be fair, I didn't expect her to lose her powers. That I didn't see coming.
Well, even she gets her powers back at the end.
Yeah, I didn't really understand. That didn't really make sense to me.
Yeah, that was dumb as well. Yeah. And also, sorry. Her and Freddy are like going out by the end of the film. She's 6,000 years old.
He's got 16.
Yeah. 17, I think. 17.
What, you're saying Licorice Pizza vibes?
I'm just saying, like, if that was the other way around, that'd be a bit nuts. I'm just saying.
Yeah. But,
and also, I was going to say as well, I liked... I'll ask you, Chris, what did you think about the two post-credit scenes?
Yeah, I... What was the first one?
The first one was the JSA one.
Yeah, I thought it was funny. Because you can see, like... He makes very good points, Shazam.
Yeah.
It's probably the most adult points he's made the whole time. But...
Glenn, do you want us to explain what goes on, or do you not
care? Yes, please.
So the first post credit scene is you see Harcourt and what's the other guy's name?
the geezer with the glasses who's in.
Yeah, from Suicide, from Peacemaker.
Yeah, Peacemaker. The big size glasses.
Economist or something.
That's the one, yeah, yeah. And they are basically looking for Shazam, and Shazam is in the woods, and he's just, like, messing about, zapping bottles and stuff. And they basically say to him, like, do you want to join the Justice? And he says, yeah, straight away. And then they're like, Society of America. And he's like, yes, I'm fighting for Justice League. And he's like, wait, what? Justice Society? Like, what's that kind of thing? And then kind of yeah. says about how it's, like, super misleading that they've got two, they've got two, just, like, two, like, teams called both starting with Justice and blah, 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 blah.
That can't you go on Google and just and figure out a different word for it and stuff like that? And he's like, yeah, it's quite funny and quite clever because yeah. I assume a lot of people probably think the exact same way about the whole scenario.
Yeah.
And then the second one was
with the caterpillar or whatever it was, the caterpillar. Evil caterpillar from the first one.
Evil caterpillar from the first one.
So yeah, the first one's got a post-credit where, with Mark Strong's character, the bad guy at the end, there's like this evil caterpillar that comes, or I don't know if it's a caterpillar, but it's like this evil insect that comes through and basically says like, oh, I'll be recruiting your services, blah, 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 blah. And then in this one, Mark Strong's still in prison and he's like, and the caterpillar comes back and he's like, it's been 2 years. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. Like, where have you been sort of thing? And then the caterpillar's like, well, like, excuse me, I have to sliver everywhere, so it's going to take a while kind of thing.
Yeah. That's quite funny. I like that. That's yeah, they did, like, because, I mean, when they do the comedy right, it is funny, it is clever, but I do feel like they just did it, maybe they needed a bit more seriousness in it, but, yeah, it's good end credit scenes, I'd say, good end credits.
Do you think we'll see Shazam in future DCU?
Well, they're not sure if he's part of DCEU or DCU elsewhere, is it?
Elsewhere, yeah. I would like to see Shazam in like a JSA film. I think that would be quite that dynamic, I think, with everyone else is in it, I think that should be quite interesting. Will we see a Shazam 3? Probably not, because it's tanking in the box office right now.
It's not even made its budget back.
Yeah.
It's only just shy of its budget though. It's not like
yeah, but they would need to make at least double it to kind of break even.
Yeah.
They marketed this quite heavily.
Yeah, I think it's not. It's basically going to flop. I think it probably won't make as much as Black Adam did, to be honest.
Well, I've been reading this, a little bit of beef between Dwayne Johnson over, like, cameo appearances, who should be in what film.
Mm.
Apparently he's saying, like, Dwayne Johnson blocked Superman being in one of the films and Shazam wanted to be in the Black Adam film, but Dwayne Johnson obviously blocked that as well.
Yeah.
But that's that Zachary Levy might be joining Fast franchise.
I heard the same things, and I think that, yeah, I think if it's true, and it probably is because The Rock and his ego are massive, I think The Rock kind of like conned himself into thinking that he could take over the DC like universe by himself, like with his Shazam, with his Black Adam character, and clearly he couldn't because, well,
yeah.
He's not Black Adam anymore. But I think if they come to, and I don't know why they would need The Rock's permission for this, to be honest, but if they said to The Rock, like, oh, we want to put some JSA characters in Shazam, and The Rock's like, no, I'd be like, well, fuck off. Like, they're not your characters to say yes or no to begin with. But obviously him saying, oh, I don't want to be in Shazam film, I think is really like snobby of him. Because, like, I think he said he it gives the air that he doesn't, like, want to be associated with Shazam, even though his character is derived from Shazam to begin with.
And like, his character really literally has to say Shazam to turn into Tech Adam. It's not as if he goes Tech Adam and it becomes him.
Exactly.
He says Shazam, like...
Yeah, agreed.
He was met with a bit of hubris as well. You know, needed knocking down a peg. Also, like... I've only obviously seen this from the trailer, but the whole kind of meta bit where Shazam says to Helen Mirren's character, like, oh, something about Fast and Furious. And I was like, she's in Fast and Furious.
Yeah.
You're now getting, like, muddled about you. Because that suggests that either Helen Mirren's character in the Fast and Furious, they're in the same universe, or Helen Mirren is an actress. I don't, anyway, I'm reading.
I think it was supposed to just be like a little like you say, like a meta joke. Which, to be honest, at the time I found quite funny, I'm not going to lie. So.
Well, I will not rush to see it, but I will try and find it. If it's still in cinemas, when I get a chance.
I don't think it's a bad film. I mean, it's not as good as the first film. But
I don't think the first one was very good. So.
You didn't think the first one was very good?
Not from memory, but...
See, I quite like the first one.
Same.
But I do think the first one faltered by having the ending it did. Like, giving everyone powers that soon on in the franchise.
Yeah, I agree with that.
They could have done it at the end of this film, and it would have enticed people to maybe then be like, oh, that's something we can look forward to seeing.
Mm. So what are we seeing in the coming week? There's Mario, there's Dungeons & Dragons, which looks okay.
I'm seeing Dungeons & Dragons Tuesday.
Okay.
Are you seeing it Tuesday, Abs? Have you seen it already?
I haven't seen it yet, so Tuesday, I guess.
Tuesday. We'll see. I'm going to try and see John Wick, and I'll probably try and see Mario as well.
Cool. So
I'm 50-50 on whether Mario's going to be any good because of the voice acting.
Yeah.
Do you know what? The thing of, sorry, I just want to talk about Mario really quickly, is that if you'd got someone... And he would have done like, it's to me, I'm at it, and all that stuff. People would have hit the roof. They would be like, this is ridiculous. This is stereotyping, da 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 da. So, yeah.
They're in two blues, aren't they?
Yeah.
They could have got Gino DeCampo to voice him.
Is he the one who did the thing?
He's an Italian British chef who speaks.
Oh, like... right. Okay. They could have got, Did either of you watch House of Gucci with Jared Leto?
Yeah.
His Italian accent in that was horrendous. They could have got him to do it.
Yeah. I mean, you know, they could have cast someone who was Italian. But anyway.
That would have been sick. They should have done that.
Could have got Antonio Conte to do it. He's out of work now.
Yeah, true.
Cool. Well, when we reconvene, we will chat about that. There'll be a couple more episodes of Mandalorian, no doubt. And, yeah. If there's anything you want us to watch or any questions you've got for us, please do tweet us at YSCPodcast17. Obi's taking charge of that and is being a bit more active on that. We're also on Instagram as Your Average Critics. Tune in next time.
Keep sexy.
Peace.
I've got to wait for you to say that.